Parshas Korach. New parsha. So it has Vayikach Korach Yesh B'chamesh Mitzvah Saseh V'arba Mitzvah Saseh. So there are five positive and four negative commandments. Mitzvah Shim Peches 388. Mitzvah Shmiras HaMikdash. The mitzvah to guard the temple. Shinstavu HaKohanim V'Leviim Lishmor HaMikdash V'Leches Sevivo Tamid B'chol Laila V'Laila Kol HaLaila. They never let their guard down. Even when the Beis HaMikdash was closed, so to speak, they were always walking around and making sure that nothing untoward was happening.
Wait, did the Beis HaMikdash actually have doors that were closed?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
We just talked about, when was it? A couple mitzvahs ago, we talked about how something was only talked about the opening of the doors of the Beis HaMikdash. Oh, okay. And how... Yeah, it was the Nazir. When the Nazir has to shave, so it says Pesach Ohel Moed. So then it said that the Nazir, well, did he really get a haircut at the door of the Beis HaMikdash? That's not so nice. So the answer is no, it had to be at a time that the doors of the Beis HaMikdash are open. So there's halachic significance to the idea of the doors of the Beis HaMikdash only being open during the daytime. Mm-hmm. So this guarding was purely a symbol of honor. You know, like outside Buckingham Palace, they have the guards standing there, and they have a changing of the guard, even though, you know, for the Queen's security, they could, you know, electronic cameras and in these types of systems and a fence that has electronic monitoring would surely be a more effective system than having guards stationed outside. But nevertheless, it's for honor. It's simply
bearskin caps, you know, right?
Right. So yeah. It's simply for honor rather than for actual protection.
In front of Mount Sinai, are they for honor? Or are they
no, for those are for real protection. Those are for real protection. Yeah. Lo mioshum pachad meoyev chalila. It's not that we're worried that there's going to be someone attacking the Beis HaMikdash. Shneimar v'shamru es mishmeres ohel moed. That you have to guard the guarding of the base of the tent of meeting, which translates into later times to the Beis HaMikdash. Loshon sifri ato vanecha itcha lifnei ohel moed. Lakoanim mibifnim v'avim af mibachutz. Meaning that the Kohanim used to watch over the Beis HaMikdash internally and the Leviim externally. Kilomar Lishmor also Veleches Svivo. This is the Leviim who used to walk around the perimeter of the Beis HaMikdash campus at nighttime in order to make sure everything was good. Over Mechilta, Sifri Zuta, not really what we call the Mechilta, Amru, Vishamru Es Mishmeres Ol Moed, Ainli Ela Baase. That there, it seems to be a positive commandment to guard the Beis HaMikdash. So you see that has a positive commandment associated with it, and as we'll see in a couple of mitzvahs from now, there is also a negative commandment that one should not neglect to perform the guarding of the Beis HaMikdash. Hashem Nem Marod, Gedola La Mikdash Sheesh Alav Shomrim, Eino Dome Palterin Sheesh Alav Shomrim, La Palterin Sheeino La Shomrim. So if you have a palace, again, it's considered to be a higher level of honor if you have actual people guarding the palace, even if there's a moat, even if there are things that would prevent people from getting in, but it's considered to be an honor. So that's at the White House, and don't have actual guards, just have electronic monitoring systems.
They have actual guards.
Those are not honor guards.
I think there may be actually...
They're plain clothes, policemen with guns or something, but there's not going to be... There aren't people with nice uniforms that are there specifically for the honor.
I can see it right when the cars pull up with, I don't know, dignitaries. And yeah. They come out and they stand there sort of like an honor guard. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah?
Like, or it's not like rebels, like if it's raining kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
It's not like the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, real honor guard. Obviously, they're...
Exactly. So, similar idea that we're not concerned that something's going to happen, but it's just a symbol of respect and honor. So palterin, the palace, can also be applied to the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Mishor she'a mitzvah, ma shekvar kosafti kama pa'amim, ki b'chvod ha'bayis sibol ha'seis moroi alev b'nei adam. That when people see that the Beis HaMikdash is being honored, that was going to increase their spiritual connection to the Beis HaMikdash, they're going to be more drawn after the lessons that the Beis HaMikdash has to offer. So if you go there to daven, are offered korbanos, so you're going to, it's going to penetrate your heart that you have to do real repentance. If you realize that this is a really important place because you see it being honored in such a manner. When we're talking about building the Beis Hamikdash, earthly, again, monarchs have honor guards. Fine, so you don't get the same awe out of a palace lacking guards as you do out of a palace with guards. That's why everybody flocks to see the changing of the guard. It's not so, you know, whatever. It's just a little ceremony, but okay, fine. Medina Amitzvah. I was in Budapest, Hungary, so they have an honor guard actually outside the presidential palace. So they have a changing of the guard that's also people go to watch. It only involves, I think, two. There's only one guard there. It's not as elaborate as as the one in London. Good. But okay, they have this same idea. Medina Amitzvah. So you have 24 groups of people who used to guard it each night within 24 places. Hakohanim Shomrim Bishlosha Mikomos Mibifnim Bahalavim Bechofal Mikomos Mibachutz. The Kohanim's job was to watch it in three different places inside, and the Levim in 21 stations outside. There was one person who was the overseer to make sure that all of these guards were doing their job. And he used to carry torches. It was nighttime, okay? You have to have a torch to see. The Ish Har Habayis Nikra. He was called the Man of the Temple Mount. Sounds like the title of a novel, but that's what he used to be called, the Man of the Temple Mount. The whole mishmar she'eno omed the omerlo ish har habayis shalom alecha. So this, the people had to be the first to greet the manager, the overseer. It was a sign of respect that it was expected that as he was making his rounds out, supervising all the people who were guarding the base of Migdash. So before he said to them a word, they had to stand up, if they weren't standing, but they had to stand up and they had to say, "Greetings to you, Ish Har Habayis." And if they didn't do this, Nikar Shehu Yoshein, it would be that this person was sleeping on the watch. Again, they had to stay up all night. So it was a little difficult, but you had to do it when it was your turn. So if the person was sleeping, the Chovto Bemaklo, so the Man of the Temple Mount used to whack him with a stick. Urashusayelo, and if he thought it necessary in order to discipline the person who was sleeping on the job, Urashusayelo Lisrofes Kisuso, he could set fire to his garment.
Well, the military, they shoot somebody who, if you fall asleep and you're standing watch in wartime, that's a capital offense. You know?
Will they shoot you on the spot?
I assume they have
they have a court martial.
Right. Oh, but actually, it's like the Russian Sforno say that actually this wasn't purely ceremonial, that the guards sort of all kept order. They prevent, a non Kohen from trying to offer a korban or something like that. Something that,
someone would sneak in the middle of the night and try to offer a korban.
No, it was during the day, too. This is not simply the middle of the night, was it?
It says the nighttime, though. It's talking about night. I don't know. A broader purpose for essentially the service and honor guard to prevent people from entering the Mishkan. Others explained the guards were stationed in order to ensure that non-Kohanim would not approach and attempt to perform a voda, which the Vitz would be in the place and the guards required during the day. Then. Okay, fine. So,
burn his clothes?
So if he was sleeping on the job, strength, but during the day it was swarming with Kohanim who are awake the whole time. I don't understand. Okay, all right. We'll see. We'll look into it. We'll look into it more. Okay, fine. So he used to set fire to his clothes. Adchi Omrim Birushalayim Makol Bazara. What's all this screaming in the courtyard of the Beis Hamikdash? Kol Ben Levi Loke of a God of Nisrafim Shiashin Al Mishmaru. It's the voice of the Levi who's screaming because trying to put out the he sees that the corner of his garment is starting to burn and he's trying to put it out, so that's the punishment if you fall asleep on the job. The answer, Protea, Keon Heichan Hayu Halevim VaKohanim Shomrim V'im'eira, where would they do it? The exact places and the stations where they were. V'im'eira keri le'echad me'em keitzad hu osa. So if somebody had a seminal mission at night, one of these guards. V'cheisad sidron u'maseyen somuch l'shachar, how they would do one final round, and then they would open the doors. Hakol mizbar yofeh v'peregrishon u'maseches tomid u'maseches mido. So all this is explained. Again, the Gemara doesn't go into detail, which is why you have these different opinions about the exact parameters of the mitzvah. But the Gemara presents that the Mishnah and Gemara presents about the same level of detail as the Sefer Chinuch describes. Doesn't add too much, and again, there are other interpretations apparently of what was going on. This is applicable to male Kohanim and Levim in the times of the Beis Hamikdash. That they're the people who are they shtel tzu to the Beis Hamikdash, that they are the ones who are attached to the Beis Hamikdash, so therefore they're the ones who have to perform this mitzvah. Im avra ze bitlu shmira zo bitlu asay u milvad she avra lo zay kemo shnichta besay ze bez rosh hashem. So again, there's also a negative commandment, so they violated that, as well as they violated the positive commandment that one is required to perform shmira samikdash. Mitzvah Shin Pei Tes 389, Shalis Asku HaKohanim Ba'avodas HaLeviim Velo HaLeviim Ba'avodas HaKohanim, that the Leviim and the should not engage in the tasks of the Kohanim and vice versa. Shalis Asku HaLeviim Ba'avodas HaKohanim Velo HaKohanim Ba'isak HaLeviim Ela Kol Echad Yaseh Melachto HaMiyuchedes Lo. Each group has to do the appropriate type of tasks that are for that group and not for any other. Midichsiv Ish ish ala voda sova el maso. It says in the parsha, each person according to his work and his carrying. Lashon amenia sheba bezehu shenemar belviim ach. Again, later in Sefer Bamidbar, it says ach el klei hakodesh vel hamizbech lo ikravu. They cannot come close to the holy vessels and to the altar. The achar kein shav. That's the Kohanim's job. The achar kein shav hakasu v'diber al kohanim. So there you learn that the Leviim are not allowed to do the Kohanim's work. So how do you know that the Kohanim are not allowed to do the Leviim's work? The Omar below Yamusu gam heim gam atem. It says neither the Leviim nor the Kohanim are going to die if you adhere to these rules. So you mean, what do you mean? What the Kohanim are going to die? You just said the Leviim aren't allowed to do the Kohanim's work. So if the Leviim do the work of the Kohanim die? No, obviously what the pasuk means is that the Kohanim, it's implicit that the Kohanim are not allowed to do the work of Leviim either. And if the Leviim, if the Leviim violate a prohibition, again, maybe a slightly different level, but the Kohanim would violate a prohibition if they do the work of the Leviim.
So the Kohanim are not allowed to start singing or something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yirtzel omar bezeh shatem kemochein yichlol eschem lavzeh. This also includes you. Ki kemoch Leviim nimnoim yimalachtechem. Okay, just like the Leviim aren't allowed to do your work, so you aren't allowed to do the Leviim work either. Lashon Sifri, El Klei HaKodesh Vel HaMizbech Azhara, that this is a lo saseh, it's a negative commandment. Velo Yamusu Onesh, that what happens if you do it? You die. Ein Li Ela HaLeviim, it's called Misa Bidei Shamayim, by the way. Basically, usually when it says Velo Yamusu, it refers to a divinely inflicted death penalty, and it's not subject to an earthly death penalty. It has to say, specifically, the mayhem bomb, or something of that nature. You should put him to death in order for it to be considered to be an earthly death penalty. So since it says also them and also you, so the Sifri derives that it's not only a problem for the Kohanim to do the Leviim's work and vice versa, but that even within groups of Kohanim and groups of Leviim, people who are charged to different tasks are not allowed to do the work of the other group. He'll explain a little bit about that later. Metzumatzanu Shabikesh Reb Yoshua, the Gemara tells us, Shabikesh Reb Yoshua ben Hananiah l'sayeya es Reb Yochanan ben Gadgada ba'gofas losos. So there are two Leviim over here. And Reb Yoshua ben Hananiah wanted to help Reb Yochanan ben Gadgada seal the doors of the Beis HaMikdash.
Seal.
Amar lo chazor la'acharecha. He saw that. Rabbi Yochanan saw that Rabbi Yoshua was coming to help him. He said, "Go back." Shekvar ata mischayev benafshach. You're already starting to get perilously close to being subject to death at the hands of heaven. Sha'ani min hashoarim ve'ata min hameshorerim. I am a gatekeeper, Levi, and you are a singer, Levi. So the singer Leviim are not allowed to help the gatekeeper Leviim perform the gates, do the closing of the opening of the gates, and vice versa. His boyer shekol Levi shiase b'migdash shelo mimlachto hamiyuchedes lo chayav misa bidei shemaim. So even if you do the wrong type of work, even within the Leviim, then you are subject to divine death. So if the Kohanim do the Leviim work, so if the Kohanim do the work of the Leviim, so according to the Rambam, they are, which is Abrachinach follows, so they don't receive the divine death penalty, but rather simply it's a negative commandment, they will be punished by lashes. So it's, since it says that the Leviim shouldn't come close to the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash and to the altar, so you might think that it means they can't even touch it. They can't come close, right? So since it says it uses the word ach in the pasuk, ach el kalei hakodesh, so it says mishum avoda him chayavim velo mishum negiyah. We know that the word ach, when used in the Chumash, usually means to express a limitation on the law that it's stating. So therefore, since it says ach, so it doesn't mean all the way they're not even allowed to touch it. They are allowed to touch it, but they're just not allowed to do the worship that's involved with these vessels and with the altar. So another famous use that's coming up right this Friday of the word ach, when the Torah says by chometz, ach bayom harishon tashbisu seor mi batechem, that it says you shouldn't eat chometz for 7 days, but ach, on the previous day, you're supposed to get rid of all chometz from your homes. So what does it mean? Does it mean that the entire day of Erev Pesach we have to get rid of all chametz from our homes? No. So the word ach comes to teach a limitation on this rule, and it's not the entire day that we're not allowed to have chametz on Erev Pesach, but rather only from midday. That's what we learn from the word ach. That's why on a Doraisa level, the prohibition of chametz, owning and eating chametz, begins at midday on Erev Pesach.
Are we talking just about chametz? Or are we talking about, in other words, something that is not chometz but is cooked, let's say, in a chometz pot?
That you don't have to get rid of, no.
I'm not talking about are you allowed to eat it? I mean, why is there a limitation?
He spent a lot of
time talking about that. Yeah, Lemaisa, no. If something's cooked in a chometz pot, then you're...
By accident.
Right. So if something was cooked in a chametzik pot before Pesach begins, so if it's a ben yomo, it had been used in the last 24 hours for chametz, then the food is not permissible to be eaten after the zman is for chametz. But if the vessel was eino ben yomo, it's 100% permissible. You're not allowed to use that vessel to cook for Pesach ideally, but if it had been cooked already, then it's 100% permissible to eat it on Pesach. If it's eino ben yomo, if the pot is eino ben yomo, yeah. But certainly, even if the pot was ben yomo, you're allowed to keep that food over Pesach. We're not talking about eating. So if you cook pasta in a pot and, rinsed it out, and then 2 minutes later you cooked a chicken soup and you want to freeze it and keep it in your freezer until after Pesach, even if you don't sell it, then that's perfectly fine. Okay. So that's ach. What about vice versa? What again, so this idea that the Kohanim doing the Leviim's work is not subject to divine death. I guess because you could say an explanation for this, that if the Levim do the Kohanim's work, it's more of a chutzpah. They're, ooh, look, I think I'm a Kohen. If the Kohen is degrading himself and does the Levim's work.
Maybe he's being magnanimous and helping out.
Maybe, right, so you might, we're already doing a chametz, okay. So the, if we're already, if he's being magnanimous, yeah, so you think, might think it's allowed, and it's, but it's not allowed, but on the other hand, it's not as severe as somebody who's less holy and is doing something that is above his stature. Mishorcha mitzvah, what's the reasoning behind this mitzvah? Lefisha avoda shtei kitos eila yavoda yekaro mikudeshes. They each of these groups has to perform their own work. They have to take their work seriously.
Right.
And thinking, oh, you know, as mine isn't so important, I'm going to go help with somebody else's work, means that you don't have the appropriate seriousness and you don't realize the importance of what you're doing.
And even though you think, well, this is highly exalted and important, and this is not, it's all supposed to be getting done. So if you're participating in it, you're doing what you're supposed to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Al kein tzricha malocha lishomer meod min ha, that people who are tasked to perform certain things in the base of Mikdash have to be very careful that they don't give up and they don't get lazy and they don't forget. They have to be very on top of their work. Ve'ein sofek yikol melacha muteles al shnei anoshim bo yoser hapshia mitzuya bo yoser mimelacha muteles al echad avado. If two people are tasked with a thing, that's why, like in school, sometimes they'll give assignments that have to be done individually, and sometimes they'll give assignments that have to be done in pairs, say. So you have two students together working on the project, so it's very possible that one of the students is a little stronger and one of the students is a little weaker. And the strong student is going to end up basically doing the project on behalf of both of them. So that's not good. So the other person knows he could
freeload.
Right, exactly. That he could relax a little bit. He could relax and not do it. Ki harbei pa'amim yismichu shneim al kol echad al chaveru v'tizbat al hamalacha mi b'neim. So even worse, certain situation where two people are charged with a task, and each person assumes that the other one's doing it. So then it never gets done. Zedavar borer lechol adam. So that's the same idea over here. You want to make sure that each task gets done. The Levim do their task and the Kohanim do their tasks. And you don't want them to switch off, because then it's not a good... There's more of a chance that there might be some laziness and not as much care taken regarding the task that they're supposed to do. That the famous line in Chazal says, "Kidera deve shutve lo chamima velo karira." That a pot that's being tended by two people is neither hot nor cold, because each person thinks, "Oh, the other person is going to stoke the fire," and the other person, and so they relax, and the food doesn't get prepared properly. Midini amitzvah, the halacha is as follows. Masha amru zichron levracha. That's a problem, by the way, like we were discussing yesterday, the veishutfi. So sometimes you think you have a food item, and maybe the food item has four hechsherim on it. Mm-hmm. So you might think, oh, whoa. So these crackers with four hechsherim are four times as much as kosher as the crackers with one hechsher on it. That's why. The companies have the four hechsherim, because that's even if it's wrong, people think that they think intuitively, you know, reflexively in their heads that something with four hechsherim is four times as kosher as something with one hechsher. So the truth is that some of the time, at least, again, not always, but some of the time, the more hechsherim that a food has, the less kosher it's going to be, because each hechsher is going to say, oh no, that hechsher that's all the other hechsher that's on it is a pretty good hechsher. They're probably doing a good job, and vice versa. That hechsher is going to say, well, the other hechsher that's on is also a pretty good hechsher. So I think they're doing a decent job.
Give it one if you think the other guy's is okay. Why do you have to give it one? Because your market wants it, I guess.
No, so I mean a lot of Israeli products, for example, when they're imported to America, they'll have the OU put their hechsher on it, because people in America, you know, don't recognize all these Hebrew letter hechsherim, so they want to see just OU on it. Okay.
Yeah.
Some people don't just use only Hasidic Hechsher and the other one. So they put different ones to see that.
Right. So a lot. Sometimes it's politics.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Sometimes it's. Yeah, a lot of times politics, that there are different groups that are affiliated with this item. So therefore, they want the hechsher. They want the hechsher of different types of groups. Different, so the chassidim, litvaks, whatever. So they want
Empire Poultry. They got KAJ. It wasn't that there's anything wrong with the OU hashkacha, you know, right? It's just this, that was a way for them to appeal more to
Yeah. So Empire Chicken Poultry for the first. I don't know, whatever. I don't know exactly when it was founded, but for the first 40 years of existence, whatever. So whether it was true or not, again, I've heard reports that it was true, and I've heard reports that it was absolutely not true. But it was thought of as the less frum chicken.
That less if you frum than what?
Then the
chassidish
ones.
The chassidish ones.
It only had OU, so it was thought of as a. I heard there was a kula that they used to rely on many years ago that they for many years now have not relied on. Okay, that's not such a gishmak kula, but okay. I also heard someone that even before KJ, it could be they had already stopped relying on this kula, but he went to the OU factory and was just under OU, and he said. He picked up a chicken that they had thrown into the treif pile. So he asked the mashgiach. He's like, it had like maybe a little bruise or something. And he said, "This is nothing. This is not a shayla of a treifa. This is just a little bruise." The mashgiach said to him, "We're doing so many chickens. I don't have time to think. If it even looks like it might potentially be a shayla, you throw it into the treif pile, and it's sold to goyim. It's not thrown out. It's sold to." It's sold to goyim, so that's good. I mean, again, not that you need that. Chas v'shalom, you could have trade mashgichim to figure out what's a trade for not. But that's certainly. He also told me that they used to actually sell the treifas to the local population in Mifflintown, Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
that's where the Empire plant is, Mifflintown, Pennsylvania. So they there was a sign in Yiddish. They had a little store, like a storefront in the Empire factory where they sold the treif chicken. So so they had a sign in Yiddish that said, "Nur far goyim nisht far yidin." They said, you know, you Jews should not buy this, should not buy here, even though it's in the Empire plant. Okay, fine. So again, I believe that the kashrus at Empire was being upgraded for a while before. The KJ took it over, but
joined.
So they wanted to Empire had this reputation that they had to shake of being the less from poultry brand. So they at that time, again nowadays not anymore, but at the time the KJ took it over, I joined. They still employed non Hasidic shochtim or shochtim from different types of Hasidism. And they had to get a quote-unquote Mahadrin, Hamish, Haredi, whatever you want to call it, Hechsher, that was not Makbid, that all the Shochtim should be Hasidish. And obviously the only one that really fit the bill was KJ.
Now they're all Satmars only, right? Yeah.
So basically, again, nowadays the basic Rav HaMachshir of Empire Poultry is actually the Nir Bater Arav. It's actually the Nir Bater Arav. All the Shochtim are Samar. And in fact, so the Nir Bater Arav's logo doesn't appear on Empire Chicken. So Nir Bater Arav is really the Rav HaMachshir of Meal Mart, Ali. So the Meal Mart chicken and Empire Chicken is exactly the same. Some of it is packaged under the Milmar label, has a nearby the Rav Zashgach, who's the main Rav HaMachshir at Empire now anyway, even if it doesn't appear on the label. And the others are packaged under the Empire label, and it has OU and KJ on the label. So that's funny.
Does Satmar eat Empire now?
Those who are knowledgeable do. Yes, but those who want to see their nearby the Rav's extra on the package that they actually buy will not eat Empire. But it's fun.
Raw,
unprocessed ground is sometimes a problem because they use they grind like kishka or flour things, sausages, on the same machinery. But regular plain raw meat and poultry do not need a special. They need a hechsher in general, yes, yeah. But they don't need a hechsher for Pesach. Okay.
Although if you go to a place like Cedar Market, they mark everything.
I know my daughter says she has
just so people don't get it.
They supposedly, I mean, if they do that, they're supposed to wipe it down so they could, you know, the area and get rid of any if they had other sausages that were not kosher lePesach or they had any flour products. But you don't have to be concerned in terms of even stuff that is not labeled. If you buy, so we usually buy actually from Costco. Thanks to my mother-in-law. So the Costco packages of kosher meat that are at Costco are obviously factory sealed. It's not that Costco is repackaging their meat and poultry. So on the factory packages of Empire Chicken, they always say, it always says kosher pesach explicitly. Not that you need it to, but it does. Okay. Mishor sheha mitzvah. Lefi. Midine amitzvah mashom ezukhan al-bracha. Chamisha asar mimunim hayu b'mikdash. That there were 15 people, responsible people in the Beis HaMikdash, overseers, managers, whatever you want to call them. Echad al hazmanim, that was one that was in charge of the korbanos that were offered at the proper time. Kelomar l'chavein eis hakorban. Umiyad mizariz osam v'omar imdu kohanim la'avod ulevim Laduchan v'Yisrael la'ma'amad. So they used to say that the Kohanim should go to there to do the korbanos, the Levim should go sing, and the Jews, who were the regular Jews who came to represent Klal Yisrael in the Beis HaMikdash, they used to every week they used to switch. So they used to so then they had to go to there, the place where they used to stand. V'chevan sheshomin kolo ba'in kol echad limlachta. Once they hear the voice of this fellow who was responsible for everything, then everybody used to come to and do what they're supposed to do. The Kohanim and Leviim yeduim hayu avdim sham, and then there were particular Kohanim and Leviim that used to take turns. Well, sham is zichron lebracha. Ki Moshe uShmuel haroa v'David haMelech chilkum larba v'esr mishmaros kedisa b'tainis. So over the course of Jewish history, the leaders of the Jewish people had set groups. They assigned groups of Kohanim and Leviim to come to the Beis HaMikdash to worship at particular times. Again, the Kohanim used to worship for 1 week a year, and the rest of the time they could just relax and teach Torah and, you know, all these other things. But they didn't used to work. They only used to work in the Beis HaMikdash 1 week a year. And they also the Leviim, okay, and the Ma'amados, the regular Yisraelim who used to come watch. They would all take turns. And within the group of Kohanim that used to come on a weekly basis, then they would be organized by families to perform specific tasks. And again, the actual korbanos were offered by a specific family on one day of the week. And then again, even within that, they used to, individual people, they used to assign for particular tasks. Yeah.
Was it possible to?
V'lo hayu rashayin l'sayeya zezeh, v'chein halaviyim lo haya rashay l'sayeya ha-meshorer la-shorer v'lo ha-shorer la-meshorer. Again, the same thing by Leviim, that they weren't even allowed to help each other. Again, like we saw in the story before, that the singer was not allowed to help a gatekeeper and vice versa. Me'ilu hatesva memunim shezacharnu, and these 15 types of overseers. Arishon kvar amarnu shemun al hazmanim, v'asheni amun al nilas hasharim. One was in charge of the times, one was in charge of the closing of the gate. Shlishi al hashomrim, one was in charge of the watch. That was the Ishar Habayis, right? That's what we talked about in the last mitzvah. This fellow who would go around, and he would burn people's clothes if they weren't doing their job. Ravi al hamishorim, one was in charge of the singers. Moshe baba mishnah, the mishnah list simal. V'yeser pratev mekomos b'seir kodshim uv'sifri uv'mechilta k'moshe marnu l'mala. It's explained in many places in the Gemara and in the halachic midrashim. V'noeges b'zman ezbayis b'kohanim u'leviim, but this applies to kohanim and leviim. V'levi over al zev v'asav v'mikdash v'mlechas kohen ovil mlechas chavir alevi. If a levi does the wrong thing or a kohen does the wrong avodah, chayam misa b'dei shamayim. I'm sorry, if the levi does the kohen, so then he's liable to the divine death penalty. V'chein kohen sh'ovar v'asav v'mlechas alevi over alav. And if a kohen does a work of a levi, then he violates a negative commandment. Aval enu chayam misa, is not subject to the death. Divine death, k'mosh amarnu l'malo. Min adomek, ya kohen shesiyah b'mleches chavir ha-kohen gam ken b'misa. And so it would seem to be that if a kohen does, or assists even, in a different type of avoda that he's not assigned to, he would also be liable to divine death. Mitzvah Shinsame Shinsadi 390 Shelo Yavod Zar Ba Mikdash. That somebody who's a non Kohen should not worship in the base of Mikdash.
A Zar is a non Kohen?
Yes.
I thought a Zar is a stranger.
It is, yeah. But in this context it means yeah. Shelo Yavod Zar Ba Mikdash Kolomar Kol Mi Sheino Mizera Aaron. Anyone who's not a descendant of Aaron, Shnemar v'zar lo yikrav aleichem v'nichbal amaniya b'zealah aloshon achar. I'm sorry, b'loshon achar b'kasu v'hu shnemar v'lo yikravu od bnei Yisrael lo almoed laseis chet lamus. So it says that the rest of the Jewish people should no longer perform, go to the Beis Hamikdash to perform worship, and they will die if they do this sin. So it has to be a kohen. Mishor she amitzvah kasavti lemala b'seder zeh say gimel that. It's considered disrespectful if somebody who is not specifically designated to perform an important task does the task. If you could imagine like an earthly king, so the king says, you know, has servants, and you have the lower servants who are supposed to clean the palace, then you have the servants who are going to serve the meals, and then you have the highest level of servants, who I don't know, butlers or something, who are going to be in charge, to manage the household. They're going to pour the wine at the meals, which is the highest type of service for the king. So if you could imagine then, you know, all of a sudden, one time at dinner, the king is having dinner and wants his wine. So all of a sudden, who comes to pour the wine? A maid. Somebody who's normally just cleans the house, washing dishes. What?
Everybody came. Just look at, say, like the old-time British country houses, you know, and the hierarchy there of the butler and the other going all the way
you
down.
You watch too much television.
Too much novels.
Right. So exactly. So if somebody, it's considered disrespectful to the overlord of the manor or to the king, whoever is employing them, if a lower level servant is going to all of a sudden, ooh, I want to do the higher level servant. No, I didn't designate you to do that. What are you talking about? I want my butler to pour me the wine. I'm not interested in the maid pouring me the wine.
Yeah, nowadays they charge discrimination.
Yeah. Now, of course, the thing is, a czar was not even allowed to be in the vicinity where he could do the avoda. So,
unless he was allowed to get pretty close if he was having a korban done at that time.
Who,
yeah.
Who?
Right.
Who was not allowed?
Right.
A non-kohen.
Right.
So wait, so how does that work there?
If he was doing a shechita, which we're going to discuss in a second, so that a non-kohen could do the shechita of the korban, so then you would have to go to the place where the korban was shechted. That was an absolute rule. It's only if you had a necessity to go in were you allowed to go in.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. So what's these? What are these types of avodos? Midine amitzvah, mashamr zichron lebracha, shein chiyuv azhara, azhara's kriva zo ela hakarev la avoda mikol avodos shein mechiyuchados lekohen. You have to do something that's specifically designated for a kohen. Chmosha amr zichron lebracha, mikabelas adam veelech mitzvahs kehuna. That starting from the acceptance of the blood of the korban in a vessel, we know we have four main avodos of an animal korban. Shchita, kabbalah, holach, azrika. That you have the shechting, and then you have the receiving of the blood in a vessel, and then you take the blood to the altar, and then you sprinkle the blood on the altar. So the starting from the receiving of the blood in a vessel, that has to be done by a kohen. But the shechita, the slaughtering, can be done by a regular Yisrael, even by a woman. Mekardin. Okay. Nowadays, we know that we don't normally appoint a woman, because nowadays shochtim, people don't shecht their own meat at home. Shochet is an official communal position, which is generally why we don't appoint a woman to be a shochet. But in theory, and the Rama writes that the minhag is the women don't do shechita, but that doesn't affect the basic kashrus that even for a regular meat, if a woman would shecht an animal, it would be 100% mutter to eat that animal. Yeah,
it's because it's a communal position, or because they just don't. Like the idea, and probably not unwisely, that if the work culture is 98% men, like, what do you do?
Well, maybe all the shochtim should be women. Mm-hmm. Then you don't have that problem.
The women are cooks. The women change diapers. The women can do most jobs. I mean, come on.
Right. Well, women are more, classically, again, I'm sure there are many strong women who could do this, but they're classically women are assumed to be more likely to faint at the idea of wielding a large knife and slitting the throat of a cow.
Farmer's wife or something like that? You know, the chicken? You kidding me? You know, yeah.
So I heard that in Yemen, actually, so where a lot of things were done at home, which were And now that we don't think of being done at home, so the women used to shecht the chickens.
Really?
Yeah. It also doesn't need very much strength to shecht the chicken. You're talking about dealing right. with an ox or something like that. You know, you might need some upper body strength. You know,
you might talk
right.
about
right. Well, right.
Well, the shechting.
Well, the Name Jews are currently actually live in Yemen, but when the Jews when they were living in Yemen, so then the women used to shecht poultry, not animals, but poultry. Yes.
Yeah, there are so many halachas that involved. Right now are lost, but you know, in terms of like what makes it kosher, what not kosher.
Ask and, the women.
Yeah, well, yeah, women used to know.
Yeah. We have a lot of, there are a lot of shilas. When you had the whole chicken and you were taking apart the chicken, again, you don't have to check chickens where after you shech them every single body part in which there could potentially be a problem. But if you're dismembering a chicken and you happen to come across a body part that looks questionable, then the women used to know what was a question, and they had to take the gizzard of the chicken to the rabbi to
Paschal. Nobody's ever dumped a bloody chicken on your desk, you know, like
nobody has ever dumped a bloody chicken on my desk, and I wouldn't know how to answer if they did. So it's all these mesorahs got lost. We don't even deal with it anymore. We don't even deal with it anymore because there's all.
What about the people that make the chicken walk around the block to make sure that it's okay?
Walk around.
What about them?
Walk around the block.
Right.
Israel,
so there's a concern that since chicken are bred nowadays to get as fat as quickly as possible, so there is a concern that their legs can't carry them when they walk, so they're not healthy enough to be considered kosher.
Yeah.
Shilas of treifas in the legs, so that they so.
So why did the chicken cross the road? Oh, now we know.
To get away from the shochet.
So that's why Mrs. Hirsch is encouraging us to be machmir, only to eat chickens that have walked. I don't know if they walk around the block, but there are people.
The extra mile.
There are small shechita operations that require the chickens to at least walk a few feet before they're shechted in order to ascertain that the chickens are not the legs wouldn't have potential problems of treifas.
No disrespect intended, but I have to scoot.
Okay.
Yeah. At the time of the mad cow, you know, panic, some people were trying to get kosher, you know, beef because a down was it like a they call it an amulet, you really couldn't walk, a downer or something they call it, or, you know, is wouldn't be checked in.
Right, so that's...
We hope not, anyway.
Right, so the Gemara says in Chulin, talking about a pasuk in Yechezkel. So Yechezkel says that... What's the exact lashon of the pasuk? I think this is Nevelo Trefa Lo Achalti, something like that. That he didn't eat animals that were not kosher. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Yechezkel didn't eat animals... What do you mean? That's a chiddush? He didn't eat animals that weren't kosher? He says, no, what Yechezkel means, two things. He says, he didn't eat animals that were on their way out. Mm-hmm. So if there is an animal that's on its way out, one foot in the grave, So they used to shecht it before it had a chance to die naturally. So this would have two advantages. One is that the carcass would not be tamei. And two, that if it turned out that the animal was kosher, didn't have any actual defects, even though it was clearly not the healthiest animal in the world, if it didn't have physical defects, then you'd be allowed to eat it, rather than if you died naturally, then you have much less use for the animal. So Yechezkel Navi was saying, I never ate from an animal that was shechted in order to prevent it from dying naturally. I only ate from animals that were healthy and robust and nevertheless were shechted. Mm-hmm. And then also says that that he also meant that he didn't eat from a behema shehora b'chacham, that an animal where a halachic ruling was required.
Oh, glot then, right? Mm-hmm.
Right. So glot, basically, or other things. So sometimes, so there are people throughout history that have been known to adopt this chumrah. There was, I think, between the Chafetz Chaim's two marriages. So there used to be a woman who used to come cook for him. So he instructed her on all his chumras. Mm-hmm. So she said, you know, I don't want to eat from animals where you had to go ask the town rabbi a shayla as to whether they were kosher or not. I want only, it was absolutely no question at all as to their kashrus. So apparently one time, this whole Moifes Dikas story that one time she forgot and she served the chicken that she had to ask, that she asked the rabbi about the kashrus, and he was served the chicken soup on Shabbos, and he wouldn't touch it, and she couldn't figure out why he wouldn't touch it. So then she realized that he felt through his holiness yeah. that the soup was not to his standards of kashrus. But of course, this does not apply. It's very important to realize that this applies only if a novel halachic ruling was required, that the rabbi had to say, I never heard of this case before. Oh, or this case is subject to a disagreement, but based on my judgment, I think that there is room to be lenient in this case. So go ahead and eat the chicken. That's called a behema, not behema, whatever, an animal, whatever it is. That's called a behema shehora b'chacham. But it does not apply if you have a housewife who doesn't know all the Shulchan Aruch backwards and forwards, and she takes it to the rabbi, and the rabbi says, "Oh, this is no problem." Mm-hmm. That's not a behema shehora b'chacham. If it's an absolute halacha that you just don't know,
like the slightly bruised chicken at Empire you mentioned before, right?
So that would not be, if that really was not a shaila at all, then that would not be considered a behema shehora b'chacham. Even though he said, "Oh, there's a bruise. I rule that this is kosher." It doesn't mean it's a behema shehora b'chacham. If it's that somebody doesn't know the halacha and somebody else knows an absolutely clear halacha, then just because they answered a question doesn't make it a behema shehora b'chacham. But basically, you're right. So we're all Jews nowadays, Kimat, are careful about this because they just don't shech these types of animals.